Welcome to Bimmercast number 11. It is number 12, you're right. Let's do it. Welcome to Bimmercast number 11. It is January
12.
Oh my God, I cannot believe I just did that. I was actually, as I said that, I opened up my calendar. I'm like, wait a second. Welcome to Bimmercast number 12, third time's the charm. We are coming at you January 1st, 2010. This is our wrap-up show, so we're going to be taking a look back at 2009, even though it is officially 2010. And we're going to be taking a look into the future with a few sort of crystal ball thoughts and predictions, so stay tuned. Okay, we are back for the first time in 2010. It's been a long 2009, Michael.
It's been a very busy and long 2009. I'll go along with that as well.
Yeah, and I think for BMW, it's been a really it's sort of been the best of times and the worst of times. Although the worst of times, obviously, sales, profits, headcount, everything is down for 2009, or everything was down for 2009. A lot of that, well, we should say all of that is probably due to the world economic crisis, and especially the crisis in the U.S. But you know, there's been a lot of transition, and it's not just financially, but I think in terms of some of the ideals behind what BMW is putting out there for the consumer. And I'm talking about engines, I'm talking about transmissions, I'm talking about the way they produce cars, the way they even market cars. There's been a lot of transitions during 2009.
Yeah, definitely times are changing. We're looking more for efficiency and, I guess, overall economies of scale and packaging rather than economies of scale and overall numbers.
Yeah, it's really true. And you think about the thing that 2009 and to some degree 2008 brought is the niche within a niche, or niche within a niche, if you will. But it's something that on the face of it sounds just ridiculous. I mean, you know, who wants to purchase an SUV that is a hatchback that isn't meant to go off-road? And I mean, you can go on and on. I mean, the X6, of course, or the X5 Gran Turismo. There's a lot of these niches within a niche that BMW have started to cater to. And you know, it's like I said, on the face of it, it seems a little strange for a company like BMW, not the biggest out there, mind you, to be going down this road.
And I think that's the thing. You know, BMW is still independent, and their overall goal is to produce a quality luxury product with sporting intentions, not necessarily sports cars. And I think that's where we sometimes as enthusiasts get stuck. You know, BMW equals sports car, and it's not. BMWs are sportier sedans, sportier SUVs or SAVs, or, you know, they're a sportier way to get from point A to B, but not necessarily a sports car.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that we can talk about, or we can sort of frame the conversation around, or at least start, is to talk about some of the reviews we've had over the past year. We've had a lot, and you know, obviously we've had a lot of press cars. We've even thrown in an older review, and I'd like to do a little bit more of those as we get more opportunity. But really, the first thing that we started talking about in 2009 was, I believe it was your drive of the 335D, and I followed that up with a week-long review of it as well. But first, I want to hear your take on the car, and I know our take is similar, but I'd love to hear you talk about that a little bit.
The 335D to me is the ideal car for the American driver. It really is. I mean, it fits the torque sensing. Like, everybody likes that seat, you know, be pushed back in the seat. Mm-hmm. Gets good mileage. It's economical in that aspect.
Two things that car needs for me to buy it. First off, it needs an M Sport option, because I'm currently addicted to the M Sport body kit, anthracite headliner, all those things. And I think it needs BMW's new, and I would call them proper, plus minus pull paddles on the steering wheel.
Yeah, the pull, well, we'll start seeing that soon, like the M's. But I agree, the the car would benefit from both of those. But I also think that since the U.S. has the DEF, the diesel emission fluid, in the rear on the bumper, mm-hmm. that they wouldn't necessarily redesign an entire new bumper.
No, they won't. You're right.
You know, so for... And I understand that, and I think you do too, that they can't really build something that 1,200 people are going to buy.
Right, you're right. Not even 1,200. I mean, you're talking about 150. No, right. I totally agree. And those are that's a wish list that I know will not or probably ever be fulfilled. But I will say those are two things that have always kind of kept me, you know, every time I look at that car, I think, ooh, that would be, you know, such a great commuting car, such a great all-around car. You know, even with the automatic, and I'm a manual snob, but I always kind of been kept at bay by those two things. Next up, we both drove the X5, and let's use the full name. I kind of refuse to, but I know that you've definitely been you know, toeing the party line when it comes to this name. The X5 X Drive 35D.
Yes, from now on it will be called the X5 35D.
It's ridiculous is what it is. It's like the minis are the worst. You've got the John Cooper Works World Championship 50. Actually, I think it's the Mini Cooper S, John Cooper Works World Championship 50. The Mini Cooper S, John Cooper Works GP. I mean, these things are ridiculous. Anyway, great car, the X5 35D. To me, why would you buy any other X5? I don't know.
There is no reason to buy any other X5. That is how the X5 should be in every sense of the word. It really is. There's nothing wrong with that car, that vehicle at all. It's fantastic. You know, it really should eliminate the gas six-cylinder. It really should. And, you know, it gives you the torque of the V8 with the fuel economy of the 6. It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, it really is. I mean, the only thing that it's missing is like a tree stump pulling package. I mean, with the amount of torque in that engine, it just feels like it was meant for that car. I will say the engine felt a little bit less refined, and it's probably just the way that the noise was coming from the engine compartment, as opposed to the 335D. But still, just a fantastic car. Just absolutely loved my time with it.
And that is that's picking up some serious market share. So people are starting to realize that really is a great package.
Now, what have you heard about sales in general?
I've heard that the sales on the X5 with the diesel motor have definitely taken a big jump, and it's well up to where they had hoped it would be, you know, 10% at least.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's actually really, really good to hear. So one of the things that we like to do is, speaking of that X5, and I know it's not a direct competitor, but you drove the Q5 earlier this year and had some thoughts on it.
Yeah, the Q5 is, you know, it's an Audi, and obviously it's got its Audi tendencies, but they really did a really nice job with designing that. And what they did was they took a step ahead of where the current BMW X3 is. You know, they learned from what BMW did with the X3 and tried to make it, you know, more interior friendly, I guess you could say. It's much more of a nice environment inside the cabin. It drives very well for what it is. I was really quite impressed with it. And to be honest with you, I you know, while the X3 does have some advantages in its overall sporty drive, that's about it. That's all it's got right now on the Q5. And the Q5 would be my pick right now if I had to go buy an SUV in that size.
Wow. Bold statement. My pick would be a 3-series wagon, but that's just me.
I said, you know, if I had to pick an SUV, that's what
I know. That's kind of unfair
I will always go with the wagon, Gabe. Always.
Well, and I'm a little nervous because, you know, I'm sure you've been reading about this as I. The new 3-series Gran Turismo is going to be coming out in the next couple of years. Are we going to not see the wagon in the U.S. after that?
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to say probably.
And it's I just heard church bells toll.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a sad, sad day if that's the case. But not to derail us too much, just going down the list, you had a chance to get behind the wheel of the 135i Performance, BMW Performance car that BMW has built up over in New Jersey. It looked fantastic.
Loved it.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. Their car, I think it's Car Magazine, Car Evo over in the UK is currently doing a long term on the 135. and they have fitted, or they're systematically fitting the car with different BMW performance options. And they're finding it, well, so far they've just fitted the wheels and the tires, which I think are, I don't really know the point of them other than aesthetics. And they did some, and I think maybe a short shift kit, and they did some quick lap times, and they're actually worse than before. And they may have actually fitted, I know, I think they're fitting the suspension next month. Regardless, should we, without talking about the engine kit, do people actually expect, or should people expect to see differences in numbers when they fit these parts, including the exhaust? Or are we just talking about sort of the seat of the pants feel, you know, the sound?
Well, no, I think with the exhaust, you're definitely gaining, you're gaining some torque. I mean, it's like minimal. It's 5 to 10 foot-pounds, and the same thing with the horsepower ratings. But the other thing you have to realize is with these wheels, they're upsized. So you stock car, you're going to have 18-inch wheels, and then you're upsizing them to 19s. And
are they actually, are they 19s?
I believe they're 19s, yes. And then so you're upsizing them with bigger run flats, which add more weight. As we all know, the run flats are not the lightest things under the sun. So, but from a performance standpoint, I mean, if you're going with the same wheels and the same size, you're not going to see a difference in just changing the wheels. And the BMW performance wheels are actually, they're cast wheels, but they are machined to save weight in specific areas. So they do weigh less than the stock wheels do. So from that standpoint, I'm not really sure how they could effectively get slower.
And well, maybe slightly different wheels, because they actually measure them heavier than the ones they had on their car.
Yeah, it could be because of the run flats, the wheels. But the shift kit is fantastic, and if they made one for my M3, it would be in there right now, let me tell you that much.
Oh, there we go.
It's crisper.
It really
is a crisper shift. It's shorter, crisper, and it feels more precise, and that's just, you know.
One of the biggest releases this year was the 7 Series, and I had a chance to spend a week with the 750 earlier this year, the 750i, not the IL, and I know you did too, but I have to say off the bat, this is the best 7 Series of all time in my mind. It is just incredible in terms of being perfect, in terms of being sporty, in terms of being luxurious. It does it all so well. The technology is there when you need it. It is logical. It makes sense right away versus the previous generations, iDrive and so forth. Design-wise, I think, you know, color and wheel choice certainly helps, but I like it a lot. And I especially like the interior. I think this, and I know this interior obviously has to some degree been carried over to the 5 Series GT and the 5 Series. It is fantastic. I mean, the material choice, the design, the layout, everything, I love it.
It's a great car. Compared to the outgoing model, there's nothing to compare. It's on a totally different level, and they learn from, if you want to say, mistakes or errors or however you want to put it, but they tested this car, you know, more than any other car they've ever tested before it even hit market. So they had a lot of hours logged in it and didn't want the same, you know, computer glitches and things like that that influenced a lot of the media and buying public with the first previous generation. So they did a great job. It drives like a much smaller vehicle, you know, and you can change the settings so you can go in comfort or you can go sport plus. And it really is a great car for what it is in the executive class. It's going to be hard to beat it. And that motor, the V8 twin turbo, it's a rocket.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And as far as the efficiency, I mean, you're talking about an engine that gets an unbelievable amount of torque, way more than your M3, but I got way better gas mileage on the highway. I'm curious to know what you got. I got, I think it was mid-20s, if I remember. I know it's in my review.
Yes, I got significantly better mileage in the 750Li than I do in my V8 M3, milking it for all it's worth.
So, I mean, it's obviously two different cars meant for two different purposes, but interesting to see how that technology manifests itself with efficiency. Now, you, and I haven't had a chance to do, in fact, I had an opportunity about 3 weeks ago, and I didn't have the time, unfortunately, but you did get some seat time behind the X6M. Tell us about it.
Well, the X6M, I think, is going to, you know, it's the halo vehicle to usher in a new era at M right now. You know, it's
Did you say error or era?
era, not error. Era, a new time, new period in M. You know, it's the introduction of turbocharging to M motors and all-wheel drive to M and automatic transmission to M, a whole bunch of stuff new to M. And I think in the end, they actually did a really great job with what it is. It's, you know, we can go to that Top Gear that they just did recently with the X5 version going around the track, and it's quick. It's a quick vehicle. Yes, it's heavy. There's a lot of electronics and a lot of gearing and technology and the dynamic performance control vectoring the torque here and there and everywhere. And yes, it does take a layer away, but in all honesty, you still feel the road, which to me is amazing. With all that stuff going on, you can still feel where everything's going.
You know, I said it in my review. I was very much not a fan of the X6 before I drove it, before I spent a week with it. And I love it. I came away just with such an appreciation for the vehicle. And you know, it's a little bit, obviously, it's a 5,000-pound vehicle, and it's a bit ridiculous. But at the same time, there's a character to it that you can't help but love once you live with it day in and day out. You know, it looks gorgeous. It's sort of this tall, bulky thing, but it doesn't feel, because it's so tall and the wheels are so big, I mean, it's kind of funny. It doesn't actually seem as big as it is a lot of times. It drives much, much smaller.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's interesting. The X6M, I was lucky enough to get a ton of lap time down at Road Atlanta in it and put it through its paces, and the thing will do whatever you want it to do. It really, truly will. And in the hands of an M engineer and an M driver, it does things that you can't even imagine that something so big and so heavy can do. And yes, it stops. It really does. It stops with those massive brakes, and it's just a great thing. And you know what it is? And I think a lot of people forget that there was a period of time where M didn't have a vehicle to work with. The M3 was finished. The next M5 wasn't coming to market yet, and they had developed all this technology, and they needed something to put it in. So it wasn't going to sit on the shelf. Somebody else was going to use it, and then, you know, us enthusiasts are saying, well, how come we don't have that? So this is what they've given us, and they've also shown us what they can do with something so heavy. So when they get this new car coming to market that's a lot lighter, it's going to be pretty amazing what they're able to do with some of the technology that they have.
And of course, you speak of the 5 Series. Now, I would love to know if the rumor of the aluminum subframe and chassis is true, because it certainly would help in the weight department.
Truly would, and I have a feeling we'll find out sooner than later.
All right, well, there we go. Next up, and actually my highlight of the year has to be the Z4 35i. This car, this new Z4, is, and I hate to sound like a broken record, I would say the 7 Series was shocking, but the Z4 was probably just even more shocking in terms of how complete a car it was. It isn't the enthusiast car that the old one was. It doesn't have the same, I would say it doesn't have the same feel. It's faster. It's more comfortable. It looks better. It's easier to live with day to day. It's impeccably designed, engineered. Again, fit and finish is incredible. The interior, you know, the interior leather, the plastic, the everything that makes up the car is so well executed.
Definitely executed well. And to go along with the not as enthusiast car as the previous was, and BMW unfortunately learned a lesson from the previous car. Enthusiasts don't buy cars. They talk about cars, and, you know, that's the truth. I mean, how many times you hear that, oh, I'd buy this, I'd buy that if it had this,
it's so true.
You know, and I'm an enthusiast, and you know what? It doesn't come down to anything until somebody puts their money where their mouth is. And unfortunately, the general buying public doesn't like a harsh car. They don't like a noisy car, and they really don't want a car that's going to make them nauseous, you know, like you hit a bump and your teeth rattle and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that's what you love, that's what I love, and that's what all of our readers love. Unfortunately, we make up probably 5% mm-hmm. of the total buying public in the U.S. when it comes to buying cars. And we kind of lost out, I think, with the initial run of this Z435, but BMW is making up for that in the new SI version.
But even before, you know, even if we don't talk about the SI, we should definitely give the 35i its due, because I think as a roadster, you know, as a car that you want to, and I did this, I basically took this thing on, it's like July 3rd or I don't know when it was, and top down drove 600 miles, 500 miles to a destination, and got out of that car and felt fantastic. I mean, it is absolutely a roadster in the classic sense.
And that's what you want. You know, that's the thing. That's what you really should be able to do with this. You know what I mean? It's get in it, drive it somewhere, and not be like, oh, my back. Oh, this is mm-hmm. so cramped, this and that and the other thing. And they've done a good job with that. They've definitely changed the class of the car, I want to say. You know, it's no longer competing with the same cars it was, or at least attempting to compete with. It's now more along the lines of a Mercedes SL, if you ask me.
Well, so that's an interesting thing. I was thinking about that the other day. If it's more like the SL, then why don't we have a V8?
Well, do you really need a V8?
I don't know. I mean, the Mercedes sells a lot of SLs with V8s.
Yeah, I think that's a...
Well, maybe not much anymore.
Yeah, I think that's kind of... the SL is a different price point as well. And BMW essentially is building higher or equal performance cars at a cheaper clip than their competitors. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the X6 and the X5M also goes in line with that. If you compare that to a Porsche, you know, Cayenne GTS, you're talking 125K, where you can get into an X5M for about 90. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the SL versus the Z4. There's about a $23,000 difference from base to base on that.
Hmm. Well, it was a fantastic car. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So what do you think of the hardtop? The hardtop convertible on that.
I thought you were talking about the race car. I loved it. And I sat, actually we worked on our Lemons car this summer, and we had that car outside my garage, and we, the group of guys I did the 24 hours of Lemons with sat around and talked about the idea of buying that car, as an enthusiast and considering it a coupe, because, you know, for all intents and purposes, when you look at the thing with the top up, it looks like a coupe, especially if you don't have it in white, especially if it's like a darker color. It sounds like a coupe inside. It is extremely rigid. It has all the hallmarks of a coupe. In fact, the only thing you can't do with it is you cannot drive it at a BMW CCA driving event, because it is not a coupe, unfortunately. So, you know, as far as, you know, the notion of buying it and considering it a coupe, I think you can do it. I mean, I think that this is the first convertible that I could look at and say, you know what, if I'm looking for a two-door, I could actually live with this car. I'm not a convertible fan, but I love the idea of being able to put the top down on the nice days.
That's a good take on it. Because I can't say the same thing for the 3 Series convertible. It just, mm-hmm. the look is different when it's up.
And I agree. I really agree. In fact, I also think that it doesn't feel quite as rigid as the Z4. There's like that last maybe 10% of rigidity and just refinement that you don't have with the 3 Series convertible that gives you that cocoon-like coupe feel. And obviously the look, you know, one of the things that drives me crazy, especially at the M3 convertible, which I see a lot of in Chicago for some reason, that damn chrome strip around the windows. I mean,
yeah,
how hard would it be to just, you and I both know it's an obscene amount of money to change any part on a car when it comes to production, but it seems like it wouldn't have been that hard to do.
Yeah. Or just not do it from the get go. Right.
Yeah. 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 So, it's a great car, the Z4 coupe, slash convertible, whatever you want to call it. I I wonder if, you know, if and when M does finally get a hold of that car, you know, does it even matter? Does a coupe even matter? I mean, it's already such a great platform to create an M version. You know, why not just keep it as it is? I don't know. I mean, I could certainly see the argument for taking it out. You're saving a lot of weight. Just make a very simple carbon fiber or aluminum coupe, hard top on that thing, and be done with it. I could really go
like
either way.
Yeah, like an MX-5 Miata maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Actually, you think about it. If you lighten that car up, you could get away with 300 and some horsepower in that thing, and it would be just amazing.
You could, yeah.
But that's another topic for another time. Michael, tell me about the X5M. So how did it differ from the X6M?
Not really much. Drive is pretty much identical. From the engineer's perspective, the cars are identical. There was some slight modifications made to the rear on the X5 from stock form. But aside from that, they drive very similar. I'm a fan of the X5 form over the X6 form, just because I'm a more function person than form. So to me, the added seating, you can actually seat five in the X5M, mm-hmm. and the fact that it's got a full panoramic glass roof is just amazing.
But of course, then you have, you know, like 180 pounds above your head.
Yeah, but it looks sweet, Gabe.
It's true. But at that point, you're driving around in a 5,000-pound vehicle. I mean, what's 180 pounds?
And you have so much horsepower, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And you're dragging like a tree stump as well as you're driving down the road. So I said that the Z4 was my highlight of the year. I think that's probably true. But this next review and the last review that we've done on the Bimmer File this year is probably my favorite. It was the most fun. And it's my 88 535 IS review that I did. And it's a car I own and I drive every few days. And I've got to say, I've had the thing for, it's been 3 months now, and I just adore the thing. You know, it certainly is not without its faults. It needs some front suspension work, as pretty much every E28 does at some point over the course of a year. But, God, I love it. I mean, it's interesting to think about older cars, and specifically BMWs, as objects that create more motion than their new counterparts. I truly believe that older BMWs can and do create more motion and more connection.
Yeah, you're connected, you know? There's no electronics getting in your way, and you feel like you're one with the car and the road, which is...
But even, you know, beyond that, I was watching the movie Objectified, which is a documentary about product design. And there was a point made by one of the founders of IDEO, which is a product, and, well, it's just a great company. You'll have to just Wikipedia it or Google it. But and they talked about, you know, these older products, these products that are designed to essentially age well, and as they age, they become better. And better is kind of a loaded word, but you know, they become more interesting. They become more beautiful. They certainly, there's a patina to them. They're used, and they may rust a little bit here and there. They may break down, but your affection to them and your connection, it all grows and grows. And I think that specific car, that E28, the design of it, everything, it's not a pretty car. It's not an overly fast car. It's not, even from its packaging, it's not a very efficient car. But for some reason, I just can't help but love the thing.
It's nice. I mean, I don't have any personal take on that.
Yeah.
I haven't experienced that too much. I was passenger, you know, when I was a kid in one, but that's about it, to be honest
yeah.
with you.
Well, it's a fun car, no question about it, and I just can't imagine ever selling it. So the one review that we skipped over was your 760 IL review.
The 750.
Oh, and the 750, right.
And then the 5 GT is not up there yet.
Oh, right, that's right. Yeah. And yeah. the 5 GT was obviously the other big launch of the season. I mean,
yeah,
that is a watershed vehicle in some ways for BMW.
Well, you know how you're saying that you've emotional attachment to the your your 5 Series. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the 5 GT was the first car that I've driven in quite some time that people actually stopped to ask me what the thing was. Hmm. And to me, that was just, it was really interesting. And I mean, it was strange, but, you know, a lot of people stopped me at the grocery store. They stopped me at the gas station. I was at the go-kart track, and I had people surrounding the car, taking pictures of the car. You know, it was definitely a different experience for me with a car that had such negative connotations from everyone that saw it in photos, to see how, you know, the reaction changes when you see it in person. Hmm.
Yeah, I would agree. I really, really liked it more than I thought I would. I haven't driven it, but I do know that it's surprisingly better looking in person. I really think that it does fill a niche as essentially a big station wagon. You've got a lot of, and again, this is the 7 Series, for instance, 7 Series owners who, you know, don't necessarily need an X5 or frankly want something bigger than an X5. You know, this is their X7 in a way, but it's done so in a much more refined and sensible way.
That's exactly, I think, the goal they were shooting for. It's definitely more refined, and you have the drive more aligned of a car. You know, you have the height advantage of almost an SUV. So it's really a happy medium of everything. It's just like you threw, you know, so you got friends in coming over for dinner, and some of them like it spicy, some of them don't like it spicy. Some of them like it this way, some of them like that way. So you have to like meet everybody's needs all at once, and that's really what this 5 GT does. And I think they're going to, you know, be able to really take from different markets that they otherwise wouldn't have pulled from. Mm-hmm. In honesty, you know, it's think of it like the R Class was a complete flop for Mercedes for numerous reasons. It looks too much like a minivan or a Hurst.
It looks ridiculous. I mean, I've got a friend who has one, and the only reason he bought it is because it was essentially Mercedes was giving them away.
Right.
And he got the diesel version. But even he, I mean, he lives with it day in and day out. I mean, he can't stand the thing. He thinks it looks terrible.
Right. And that's what you don't do. You know, that's how you don't mix everything in the right pot and get it so it looks pleasing. That's not pleasing. The 5 GT does a lot of things really well. It's going to drive more like a 7 Series than, you know, it is going to drive like a 5 Series, obviously, because of the weight and the size. You definitely feel the added weight a little bit in the back. And the only negative thing I experienced during the whole time was just on rough roads going around turns with the rear end chatter. But, you know, and that's something that I don't think most people would even realize. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really great all-around car. It's not going to blow you out of the water as far as performance goes, but I will say that the seating on the inside, the luxury amenities, and things like that, I actually even think are better than the 7 Series.
Interesting.
Especially in the back seat, you have more. You know, you have almost the same amount of space as the 760. Mm-hmm. You know, like the 750 Li, 760 Li, the long wheelbase. But now you have this great full-length panoramic roof over your head. and you can pretty much get every option that the 7 Series has as well. So,
Well, so those are our reviews for the year, but what about other stories? I mean, the Active E was obviously big. The Vision concept was huge. We're seeing a trend. BMW is clearly focused on efficiency and alternative drivetrains. Along that line and during that process, something seems to have fallen by the wayside, and that's hydrogen. We don't hear much about it. In fact, we just heard very quietly that BMW was not going to be developing a hydrogen 7, for instance. They're going to be putting all their money in terms of the 7 into the hybrid drivetrain.
Yeah, and that's not something, you know, I think that was actually announced a long time ago when the previous generation 7 hydrogen fleet was taken off the road, and they had done that final hurrah with all the celebrities. And BMW made a formal announcement at that time. We have got the technology right now. We've developed the storage tank. We've developed the motor. We're waiting for the infrastructure. As far as we're concerned, we're done with this. Mm-hmm. So they were never planning on developing another hydrogen 7 with this generation, because they have already mastered that as far as they're concerned. And there's no real need to go any further, especially if there's no fueling stations and things like that. They're kind of designing a car with you know, no purpose at that point. So I think they've pled their case, and it's going to sit in government for the next 20 years until somebody figures out a way to more efficiently take hydrogen and from the, you know, from natural gas or from splitting atoms, and who knows how they get it otherwise. But I think that's going to be the big hang up with that. And yeah, they've taken that money and they've invested it more into the efficient dynamics and the hybrids. We have the X6 hybrid, which I have driven. And the X6 hybrid is a dual mode system. It's basically the same system sort of that's in the GM products, like the Tahoe from Chevy and the, I think it's the, what is the other, the GM. I'm not sure what the name of that is at this, off the top of my head. I don't really follow that. But it's interesting. So you can run on battery power for a bit and, you know, use the internal combustion engine at another time. And it's going to be a, I guess you want to say halo for a short period of time. I don't see them using that system since it uses the nickel metal hydride batteries for much longer. I think that's going to be replaced by these newer lithium ion systems that they're using, like in the 7 series, soon to launch.
One of the things that made news recently on Motoring File was the Mini-E and how badly the range degraded during cold weather. Is that just a... Is that just a factor of the type of batteries that the Mini uses?
Well, when I did the one, I think we discussed this earlier, when I went to the One Day University and went and talked about the Mini E with them, that was one of the items they had been getting back from feedback at that time, was that the batteries in the colder climates weren't retaining the same amount of charge for a longer period of time. And what that is the batteries in the Mini-E are not conditioned, so they don't have heating elements or cool, like, you know, to regulate everything. The Active-E, the new 1 series, has all that technology. So they've already taken that and stepped it up with the next itineration of battery-powered vehicles. They've learned already from the Mini-E, and they're going forward with more advances in design to regulate the batteries and things like that.
Well, onward and upward. So we've got 2010 in front of us, obviously. We're going to see a couple big releases. Obviously, the 5 series is going to be coming out. Sounds like it's going to be stateside this summer or late spring. It's going to be in Europe in early spring. We're going to have a refined 3 series coupe and convertible. The LCI will debut in February. And we've, of course, got the Active-E, the 1 series electric program that's going to be, looks like, following in the footsteps of the Mini-E program, which has been pretty successful. What else? So this, it's time for predictions here. What else do you see in the horizon for 2010?
Well, we have an X3, which eventually will come to market, and an X1, as well as some possible new diesels and things like that. But that all depends on CAFE and some of the other EPA standards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, BMW is being flexible right now and not releasing vehicles so they can adapt.
Well, I think it's definitely going to be the year of the X3. It sounds like the X1 is going to happen after the X3 in the U.S. So the X1 may shift into 2011.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate because that car has gotten some pretty good reviews. So my question, X3, are we going to see 4-cylinder engines? And is one of those 4-cylinder engines going to be a diesel?
Personally, I don't believe we're going to see the 4-cylinders in that right away. Because if you remember, BMW launched the original X3 with a 2.5-liter 6-cylinder. And they pulled that from the market fairly quickly because of the lack of power and how that was received. So I think what you'll see is probably an N55 from the start with the X3. So you'll have an inline six single turbo twin scroll. And I think they'll adjust that way. And it also goes in line with how they've been releasing other models as well. If you look, they released the V8 in the 5 GT and the smaller motors coming afterwards, and then so on and so forth. So I think that's how they're staggering their launches.
And of course, you know, what we have coming up next is going to be the 3 and then the 1 series debuts in 2000 and probably late 2011, 2012. I mean, those are the cars that obviously a lot of us are looking forward to. And I'm sure over the next year, we're going to start to peel away some of the camouflage, especially of that 3 series. So that's going to be pretty exciting to see. There's obviously going to be some M3 GTS news. That car is going to actually come to market in, well, outside the U.S. But it'd be cool if we saw some pieces of that for sale. I don't know if that is necessarily a done deal, but it'd be cool to see some of that end up on maybe even some other special edition M3s. You never know. The U.S. is a big market, and you think about what they did with kind of pilfering the CSL catalog and creating the competition package. We could see something similar to that with the E90 and E92, E91 M3 as they finish production over the next couple of years.
Yeah, that very, very possible. And I think there's going to be a few surprises in store as well. There might be some model deletions that people don't see coming. And then we also have to look forward to the M5.
Now, if you tell me if you're insinuating that I'm not going to be able to buy my E90 four-door M3 from the dealer over the next in 2 years, then I'm going to be a little upset.
Well, I'm just saying that for 2011 there may be some missing cars from the catalog. That's all I can say at this time. But there are cars that will be disappearing from the face of the earth, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, yeah, I guess it's going to be an exciting 2010. We're going to start 2010 off, of course, with the Detroit Auto Show, and we will be there. Actually, I will be there along with Todd and Todd's been on the BamerCast a couple times. He also works on White Roof Radio and Motoring File. We're going to be doing some audio recordings and talking to designers, engineers, everybody we can get our hands on, and, of course, taking lots and lots of photos, really trying to make it accessible as possible and make you feel like you're at the show.
Yeah, and I think we're going to follow that up with I'll be at New York, and hopefully if all goes well, we'll be at Geneva, and I think you'll be at Chicago. So that's the first half of the year covered right there.
Yeah, absolutely. So look forward to that this next week. Look forward to, obviously, everybody gearing up for Detroit. So we're going to have all the news on Detroit. And once we get into late January, we're going to get into sort of the Geneva season, if you will, and also the Chicago Auto Show season. So start to look for some world debuts for both those shows.
Yeah, definitely going to have the 5 should debut in Geneva, and there's a surprise for Chicago. So
can't wait. I will be there.
Definitely.
All right. Well, until then, Happy New Year, everyone, and we will see you in about a week. Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers. Close.